Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Neil Langto. His book is The Approaching Storm, and we approach June of 1916. In those days, with the heat and no air conditioning, the conventions were held as early as possible in the summer, late spring. It is June of 1916, and Roosevelt wants the nomination, but someone is in his way. Charles Evans Hughes, formerly an attorney of modest beginnings who educated himself and practiced for the latter part of the 20th century. He then is nominated to be governor of New York and wins twice, one of them defeating a very prominent newspaper man. Maybe you've heard of him. His name was Hearst. However, by this time, he joins the court in 1910, nominated by William Howard Taft, President Taft, and he stayed away from the battles of 1912 and the progressives. So he's seen as an alternative to Roosevelt. Roosevelt measures him, however, and says, where's the fire? Always a good question, Neil. Where is the fire with Hughes? Was that a problem for the party right away, leaning towards him to take on Wilson?
I think Hughes probably would have been happier if he had not run in 1916. I have a quote in the book where he's having a conference with another journalist, and he says something to the effect that, you know, your friend Roosevelt, you know, loves the political battles, loves to be in the thick of things. I'd rather do what needs to be done in the court. On the other hand, there was pressure put on Hughes to run. There's a letter in my book where Taft writes to him and says, you have to run to save the party, to save the nation from Wilson and the party from Roosevelt. You have to run. And Hughes seemed to be the right guy because he was progressive enough, they hoped, to satisfy the progressives in the country. But he was also not too far progressive, so he would be enough for some of the mainstream, more conservative Republicans. But what Roosevelt was hoping would be that Hughes would not run, that Hughes would step aside, or Hughes would maybe not run if he knew Roosevelt wanted to run himself. But as it turned out at the convention, the Republican convention anyway, Roosevelt didn't get the support he thought he might get on the early ballots. And it was clear that it was going to be a Hughes kind of landslide at the convention. So at the same time, while the Republican convention was going on, the progressive convention was going on, they nominate Roosevelt almost at the same time that the Republicans nominated Hughes. And then Roosevelt has this very difficult decision to make, is what do I do? Do I try to run again as a third party candidate, or do I basically destroy my current party, the progressives, and come back to the Republicans? So that's the problem and the big decision that Theodore Roosevelt has to make in the summer of 1916.
The summer of anxiety is what Neil calls 1916. Hughes is nominated. Roosevelt declines the progressives and will campaign for Hughes. Very odd, though, because all the newspaper people gathered around Roosevelt whenever he appeared. Hughes, however, was no magical campaigner. Wilson is bothered by something happening on the Mexican border. John Pershing has ridden into Mexico against the Carranza government to track down pirates, Pancho Villa. And that controversy ignites preparedness so that regiments are sent to the border to guard nothing, but at the same time, it was a demonstration of Wilson being ready for war. The puzzle about all of this, because we're following progressivism, is where is suffrage in the summer of 1916 for either party? Do they make speeches about it? Do they nod to it, Neil?
This was a very important campaign for the suffrage supporters. Hughes at first didn't say anything about it, but Alice Paul, who was one of the leading suffrage forces in the country, went to see Roosevelt and said, you know, can't Hughes support the federal amendment for suffrage? And Roosevelt says, you know, Hughes is very slow, but, you know, I'll talk to him. And eventually Hughes does come out for the federal suffrage amendment, which was important. And that was actually one of the few smart things Hughes did during the campaign, because he, as you mentioned, he was not a great campaigner. Wilson was still playing this game of, well, I support suffrage, but it should be decided as on a state by state basis, which was very, very slow to do it that way. But he's playing that game. The women's suffrage groups are threatening that we will campaign against Wilson in every one of the suffrage states. There were 12 states at this point that had women's suffrage, and they were threatening that because Wilson would not support the federal amendment, they would, in fact, marshal their forces against him. But Wilson's a very skilled politician. You know, he keeps talking to some of the more mainstream women's suffrage advocates. You know, he talks to he goes to one of their conventions, and he seems to again be like, I'm for you. You know, I'm in your direction. I may not be ready to support a federal amendment. So as it turned out, you know, most of the women's suffrage followers in this country probably still supported Wilson in 1912, because I believe most of the women's suffrage states, the 12 states, I think most of them ended up still being won by Wilson. It was an important issue in the campaign, but not nearly as important as the issue of the European War and what a new president might mean in 1916. If Hughes wins, what's going to happen versus what's going to happen if President Wilson, the man who supposedly kept us out of war, remains in office.
And the neutrality, the peace movement, where is it in the campaign of 16? We have about a minute here, Neil.
I think everyone's waiting to see what's going to happen. I mean, the Germans had backed down after the Sussex, and they were basically behaving. You know, they had pulled back on their submarines. So everything is fairly quiet. There is still obviously a desire to end the war among the pacifists, but there's a lack of urgency, at least in the fall of 1916, as far as our likelihood of getting involved in the war. But I do think there's great concern among American pacifists about, you know, the continued incredible destruction and death in Europe at this time.
The book is The Approaching Storm: Roosevelt, Wilson, Adams, and Their Clash Over America's Future. We all know the ending of this. Wilson is reelected in 1916 in a very close election with Charles Evans Hughes. However, what follows is not predictable at all. The peace movement awakens because of war. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.